As I mentioned earlier, the next two Sundays and on Good Friday, we're going to look at three characters in Matthew's Gospel. We'll look at Judas this week, Peter next week, and then on Good Friday, we'll look at Barabbas. And we'll see what they can teach us about encountering the cross and looking at the cross and what it means for us today. But if I'm honest, the Judas that we're looking at this morning is really a harrowing start as we come to look at these themes. Now, I remember hearing the evangelist Rico Tice tell of a time where he went to visit a friend in Australia. And while he was there, there was this beautiful beach, he said. And this beach just looked wonderful, and the sea looked so inviting. So straight away, he was there, into his swimming shorts, ready to dive into the sea. But as he was kind of doing that, his friend stopped him in his tracks, and he said, "Have you seen the signs?" And he said, "What signs?" "The signs over there." And the sign said this: "Warning, no swimming, sharks." Now, Rico Tice was then taken back a little bit gutted, because he wanted to go into the sea. The sea looked fine. He couldn't see any sharks. And his friend said this. He said, "You need to decide, are those signs there to spoil your fun or to save your life? Are those signs there to spoil your fun or to save your life?" Now, when it comes to warnings in the Bible, we've got to ask that question, haven't we? Why is this there? And the reality is that when we see warnings in the Bible, they are there to save us, to save our lives, to protect us. And so as we come to look at Judas, there is a warning here for us, but it is here to protect us from deep harm and to protect those around us from the harm that we could cause. So we're going to start by going through the account, seeing what happened, to kind of retell the story of Judas, and then I want us to look at a few ways practically that this can help us this morning. So when Jesus was on earth, remember, he chose 12 men to be close to him. And imagine the privilege it would have been to be one of those 12 disciples. They'd have been able to listen to Jesus' teaching firsthand, and Jesus probably repeated teaching, so if he missed something one time, they'd hear it the second time. They'd be able to ask him whatever questions they wanted. And remember, this is the man who people said nobody taught like him. He could answer a question in a way that he was never stumped by anybody's questions. They'd have heard this amazing teaching. They'd have seen amazing miracles from those who nobody else could help. Jesus, with a touch or a word, could heal. They saw him bring people back from the dead. They saw him laugh. They'd have seen him cry. They'd have eaten with him. They saw him tired. They'd have been close to him and had this encounter with Jesus that it was such a privilege to have. They could have asked him, as I said, any question, any things that were burdening them, any counsel that they needed in their lives, they could go and ask Jesus, and he'd be able to give them help for their problems. And they would have seen things that weren't recorded in the Gospels. In John's Gospel, he said, there's not enough books in the whole world to contain what Jesus did. They'd have seen it. So more than we know now, and maybe when we get to heaven, we can ask them, tell us, what did you see? What wasn't there in the Bible that Jesus did? They were a really privileged group. And remember, why did Jesus get these men? Well, one of the reasons was that there was such an enormous crowd following Jesus. It would have been like a media scrum. You know, like today where if there's a celebrity out or somebody, just people just gather around. It would have been like that with Jesus. But Jesus was only one man. He could physically only be in one place at one time. And so one of the things that the disciples did was Jesus appointed them to do similar things to what he did. So the disciples preached. They cast out demons. They healed diseases. We see that in Matthew 10. So they saw amazing things, heard amazing things, and the reality is they did amazing things as well. Can you imagine the book deal that they'd be able to have if they were around today? The inside story, you know, they think, wow, or the podcast they'd be on. These would be amazing stories to hear. And the disciples, when you read through the Gospels, don't come out very well from the Gospels, do they? They're always a bit slow to understand what Jesus is saying. They always miss things. But with Judas, he stands out, doesn't he, as somebody who really, really had a dark time. And there were some signs throughout Jesus' life that things weren't right with Judas. In John 12, in the similar account to be read here, after the expensive ointment was poured on Jesus, it's Judas that says in John 12, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He points that out. And it shows in Matthew, it says that all disciples felt the same. But John adds another detail. The reason Judas was so incensed about it wasn't because he cared about the poor. Listen to what it said. He said this, not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief and having charge of the money bag, used to help himself to what was put into it. You see, he was concerned about the money. the finances. He thought, I can make something off this. And so he'd help himself. He was a treasurer and he just helped himself to what he wanted. So after this event in Matthew 26, where Jesus is anointed, and all the disciples are like, what an expense to waste on Jesus. It seems like then the real Judas starts to come out and real Judas begins to see. Now, we don't know all Judas's motives for betraying Jesus. Maybe Jesus didn't turn out to be the Messiah that he wanted. He didn't do the kind of things that he was hoping he would do. He hadn't conquered the Romans quickly enough. Maybe he just was saw that he wasn't just what he expected. We don't know all his motives, but one thing we do know is that he kept on. His concern was mostly about himself, what he could get out of it. Because we see that in Matthew 26, verse 14. One of the 12, which gets emphasized a lot, Judas was one of the 12, he was there with them, whose name is Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, what will you give me if I deliver him over to you? What's in it for me? What kind of money am I going to get? And we're told there he was given 30 pieces of silver. Now, you know, 30 pieces of silver isn't a life-changing sum of money. It's a big sum of money. It's probably today about £8,000. So think what you would do with that. You'd go on a few holidays, get some new clothes, you know, but it's not a life-changing amount of money. I'm sure it would help, but it's nothing that would transform your life. But that was enough to win Judas over. Here is Judas. This is your money. Now, the chief priests had been after Jesus for a while. They knew he was popular and they wanted to get him. But how were they going to get him? Because they said, we can't go and get him in the middle of the feast. There'd be an uproar. Jesus was so popular. People loved him so much. And so they thought, well, how are we going to get to him? Remember, Jesus avoided the crowds. He had to find ways to get away from them. Otherwise, he would never rest or have time alone with the disciples. So they needed somebody on the inside. Somebody would be able to guide them to the place where Jesus would be. And that's what happened with Judas. He went and he said, I can take you to him. I know the secret hideouts. I know the place he goes. And in Luke's account, they tell us that these men were happy and full of joy when Judas came. We've got it. We've got him through Judas. The deed is done. The money's been paid. And Judas is now just waiting for the right time. But Judas was still one of the 12. It was the Passover, a time for celebrating with close friends and family, kind of like our Christmas, you know, all the family and friends got together. And Jesus was having a meal with the disciples yet again. This could have been their third Passover together. And a meal was a really intimate thing in those days, as it is today, but even more so then. And Judas, still knowing what he was going to do, went into this meal with Jesus. And it's over that meal with the 12 disciples that Jesus said something that sent a chill throughout the room. He said, one of you who's dipped the bread in with me, that is one of my closest friends, one of you is going to betray me. And they said, look, what? Verse 22 tells us they were sorrowful. They couldn't believe it. And each one of them asked, is it me? Is it me? Is it me? They're all reeling. And as I said, Jesus says, whoever dips his bread in with me, which could have been any of them because they were there. They were all close, all intimate. And because everybody's had their turn, it came up to Judas and he said as well, is it me? Is it I, Lord? And Jesus says, you've said it. Now you might think, well, why don't they all go, Judas? At that point, say, you've said he's the one. Well, Jesus must have whispered it to him because nobody seemed to know that he was going to be the one who betrayed him. So he must have been sitting so close to Jesus at that meal that Jesus could have said it and nobody else would have noticed that he said, you've said it. In John's account, we see Jesus then tells Judas to leave, do what he has to do. Again, the disciples didn't twig onto that, what that meant. Maybe it was some business things, some finance things that he had to do. But after the Last Supper, Jesus and his disciples went to a usual place where they went, a quiet place, the Garden of Gethsemane. It's probably a private garden where Jesus went with the disciples regularly. And that's the inside info that Jesus' enemies needed. Where does he go? Where does he go when nobody's with him? It's there. Judas knew Jesus would be praying. And if you think of what Jesus was doing there, Jesus wrestling in prayer. He sweat drops of blood because of the intensity of what he was going through. And knowing something of what he was going to face on the cross, it just knocked him to the floor. And he tells his disciples, look, my betrayer is at hand. And so if you jump down to verse 46 of chapter 26, we see that moment happening where Jesus says, rise, let's be going, my betrayer is at hand. And while he was still speaking, verse 47, Judas came, one of the 12, again emphasizing, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. So in front of all these people now, Judas is in the front. And what's he going to do? Well, he's chosen his way to show the people who Jesus was. You know, there weren't photos everywhere. Some of them might not know what Jesus looked like. He would do it with a kiss. So this large crowd is with Judas. And he says, verse 49, Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you came to do." They came and seized him and laid hands on him. But just before that, do you notice what Judas calls him? He says, "Greetings, Rabbi." Now, apparently that is a really over-the-top greeting. This was quite a dramatic thing. You can imagine Judas is now in the place of power, caught everybody by surprise. Here he is, he says, "Greetings, Rabbi," kind of showing off for the crowd. And then he does this elaborate thing. How does he do it? He says, "Look, I'm going to show you with a kiss." Now, apparently disciples would kiss the hem of their teacher's garments. A kiss on the hand was a sign of respect and honor. But a kiss on the face was a personal friendship thing. And Judas did it with that one. "I know him well. We're friends. Greetings, Rabbi." He's just showing off. He's got the crowd. He wasn't an embarrassed peck of the cheek, but this elaborate gesture. How does Jesus react? "Do what you've come to do." His kindness shows something of the evil of Judas, doesn't it? "Just do it, Judas." He doesn't fight back. And the pain Jesus must have felt. You know, imagine the look in his eyes. "Just do it, Judas." He's been with him for 3 years, invested so much in him. And now he's been coldly handed over to the brutality of what's going to come over the next few hours. Jesus was soon going to be stripped, humiliated, beaten, spat on, nailed to the cross. And when we think of that pain, the callousness of Judas there, it stands out, doesn't it? And as we look and think of what Judas had experienced, what he was going through, I want us now to ask, well, so what? What can Judas teach us this morning? Well, there's two things I want us to see mainly. There's a few subheadings here, but there's two things. This: we need to be warned by Judas, but I don't want us to leave it there. I want us also to see here that we can be warmed by Jesus. Okay, so we're going to be warned, then we're going to be warmed, because there is a really scary warning here for each one of us. First of all, let's look at this. What difference does this account of Judas make to our lives? First of all, to be warned by Judas, and there's two things under this heading. The first is, don't take Jesus for granted. Don't take Jesus for granted. Judas had so many privileges, hadn't he? So many privileges. He was with Jesus for 3 years. He'd heard him teach. He'd heard him answer these questions. He'd seen his miracles. And all of that was there. And more than that, as I said, when you read through just Judas, one of the 12. What a privilege he'd had. He'd preached. He'd cast out demons. He'd done miracles. But obviously, he wasn't a true follower of Jesus. So in Matthew 7, one of Jesus' most famous parables comes up there. It's the two men who, there was a storm. One built their house on the sand. One built it on the rock. And Jesus says after that, "Not everyone who calls me Lord, Lord will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty works in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" You see what Jesus is saying? You can do lots of things for me. You can say the right things. You can be in the right places, and yet not really be trusting in Jesus. Being a Christian isn't just simply agreeing that Jesus is true. The devils agree that Jesus is true. Devil does, and his minions, they agree, but they're in hell. Christian isn't just simply somebody who does things in Jesus' name, not just being in the right place. And in that context, Jesus is saying it's somebody who builds their life on my word and what I say. And this is a warning for us today, isn't it? Is that a warning you need to hear? You've heard lots about Jesus. You could answer a really good quiz on Jesus, you get top marks. But you've never really trusted in him personally. Maybe you've done amazing things in Jesus' name. And perhaps today God is lovingly coming alongside you to warn you and say, "Come to me today. Don't get too used to me. Don't take me for granted." Also, this is a warning if you're not a Christian. I wonder what's holding you back from trusting in Jesus. You think, well, maybe one day I will trust in him, but not yet. What are you waiting for? Can you see what this shows us? You might think, well, if I was there and I heard the Sermon on the Mount live, you know, if I saw the miracles, if I saw the empty tomb, maybe then I'd trust. But, you know, Judas saw so much and he still hadn't put his trust in Jesus. Believing is not just head knowledge. It's deeper. It's a deeper issue. And so maybe this is the nudge that you need from the Holy Spirit this morning, just to say, trust in Jesus now. Don't put it off anymore. What are you waiting for? You've heard enough. Put your faith in him today. So the first thing is, don't take Jesus for granted. That's what Judas did. The second thing here, as we see, is don't mess with sin. Don't mess with sin. There's some stark warnings here about the nature of sin that we see going on. And things that should surprise us. The first thing we see is that sin hides. Sin hides. You notice that? Verse 20 and 22 in Matthew 26, where it was evening, he reclined at the table of 12, and Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, one of you will betray me." Do you notice they don't go, "Oh, it's Judas, isn't it? I mean, that's his name, Judas." It wasn't that then, was it? They didn't know. They didn't think, we know who this is. It's the one who's been stealing money from there. No, he'd hidden all of it. They didn't know who it was. That's why it was such a shock. One of us. One of the 12. One of the dangers of sin is that it makes itself look small, that it hides. And so God warns us to look out for it. So think of Cain and Abel, the story in Genesis 4. God's warning to Cain is sin is crouching at the door. Crouching implies it makes itself look smaller than it really is. And when it's crouching, it can get in easy. But the reality of it is much bigger than it appears. Sin makes itself look less dangerous, less threatening, smaller than it really is. It hides. And the other thing is that we can end up hiding it, can't we? We have amazing, as one writer puts it, we have amazing inner lawyers. We can justify anything in our hearts. Yeah, but I did this because of that. Yeah, I thought this because of that. Oh, I do this because of that. And we can justify anything. And we can justify things so quickly in our own heart, but if we see somebody else doing it, oh, we're really good at judging them, aren't we? We've got an amazing patience with ourselves, amazing explanation for our wrong, but when somebody else does it, we can see it a mile off. What is there in your life that your inner lawyer is getting you off, getting you away from, that you're fobbing off? Oh, it's fine, it's nothing, it's small. This is God's warning to us this morning. Sin hides. Judas hid his. Nobody knew. And he was putting him in a desperately dangerous situation. Sin hides, but then we notice that sin grows. Judas, I'm sure, when he signed up to be a disciple, when Jesus called him to be a disciple, didn't think, right, this is it. I'm doing this for 30 pieces of silver. It wasn't his plan straight off, was it? But his resentment grew and grew and grew like a cancer until it took over. And that's what happens with sin. It comes in small, but then it takes over. The Titanic, when it set sail in 1912, famously said to be the unsinkable, constructed this new technology, and apparently the hull was divided into 16 watertight compartments. And the thinking was, even if four of these compartments were flooded or damaged, the boat would still float. It wouldn't sink. So, as we know, the Titanic sank on the 15th of April, 1912. Over 1,500 people lost their lives. And it was thought that probably five of its watertight containers were flooded. So there's probably going to be a big gash. They'd find five of them were flooded. That's why it went down. But apparently, when they went down and they saw it lying upright on the ocean floor, there wasn't a long gash. What they realized had happened was actually there was one compartment that was flooded. And they thought, oh, it's fine, we can contain it. But actually, that was the end of it all. Just one compartment. Many people, we can make this Titanic mistake, can't we? We think, oh, it's just this, though. It's only small. It doesn't matter that much. But then it takes over. And so God's loving warning to us this morning is, sin grows. Don't let it in. Deal with it. Ask for prayer. Seek help and counsel with it. Because sin hides and it grows. And the last thing is sin destroys. We didn't read Matthew 27 at the beginning there, but we see that Judas regrets what he's done. He's full of regret and darkness. It's just, he said, what have I done? And he ends up killing himself. Can you see where it's led? He had the bravado, the showing off. He had the £8,000. Here it is. But then it left him with nothing. Sin promises everything, and it leaves you empty. Promises life and leads to death. Promises light leads to darkness. So again, this is God's loving warning to us today. Don't mess around with sin. It's not your friend. It hides, it grows, and it destroys. Can you see the warning that Judas gives us here? I want us to feel that and to say, God, thank you for showing me that today. But I don't want us to stay there. We don't just need to be kind of scared from our sin. We need to be won to Jesus. That's why I want us now, secondly, just for the last bit, to think about how we need to be warmed by Jesus in this passage. What is there of his love and his grace to you? Well, we do see here, first of all, his patient love. Look at Jesus' patient love. Murray McShane was a pastor in Scotland in the 19th century. He died only 29 years old. God used him massively in those years. But he preached a sermon on Judas, and he called it Melting the Betrayer. That's what the title of his sermon was. And his point was, Jesus time and time again warns Judas or tries to win Judas round. How? Because time and time again, Jesus says, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and I will be betrayed. He gives opportunities for Judas to turn around, to stop what he was going to do. And he says, this is how Mary McShane puts it, I can see no other reason but that he might make one last effort to melt the heart of his betrayer. So every time Jesus mentioned betrayal, it was a chance for Judas to say, no, I'm going to stop. And just after the incident of the ointment and in John's account of it, when Jesus was anointed with this expensive oil, it goes then to another scene in John 13. And we're told that Jesus got up from the table, pulled his outer garment off, so he looked like a slave, and he got down on his hands and knees and he started washing the disciples' feet. And he was doing that, washing their feet, and think of whose feet he was washing. All of them, including Judas. He was washing the disciples' feet. He was washing the feet of Jesus, of Judas, who was going to betray him. Can you see his love and his compassion towards Judas? Let's stop. Do you see what that means for you today? If Jesus loved Judas, knowing that what he was going to do, if he tried to win him back, as it were, by saying, this is going to happen to me. If he had that love for Judas, can you say, if you feel like you've let Jesus down, he loves you this morning. And in his kindness this morning, he is saying, don't drift, don't wander from me, come back to me. Come back to me now. It means that he loves everyone. For God so loved the world. So maybe you think, oh, I'm the worst person. I've done this and it's terrible. Jesus knows, and his attitude to you is one of arms wide open, saying, come to me. I know all about it. I know all about you. And I won't push you away. That's, you know, when Jesus went through this betrayal, why did he do it? He went through this betrayal so that the gates of heaven could be flung open to the worst, to the guilty, so we could be cleansed by him. Pray that as Jesus warns us this morning, our hearts wouldn't be hardened, but would be softened to him. So notice Jesus' patient love here. But also, as we look at what Jesus and what happens here, trust his willing heart. Trust his willing heart. What do I mean by that? Well, Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen to him. As I said, he'd been trying to tell Judas, to warn him for a long time. I'm going to be betrayed. He kept in the disciples. I'm going here. This is what's going to be handed over to my enemies. And they didn't want to hear it. And so Jesus, what the point is, Jesus wasn't caught by surprise by Judas's betrayal. He knew it was coming. And do you see what that means? At any point in the story, Jesus knew what was ahead. He could have gone the other way. He could have said, I'm not facing that. I'm not going to go through that pain. I'm not going to put myself into that heartache. In chapter 27, verse 53, when the guards come in and Judas has led them into the Garden of Gethsemane, he says, where Jesus says, I'm looking at the wrong chapter, where he says, don't you realize that I could have asked so many angels to come and rescue me? Don't you realize what I've been through? Chapter 26, I was in the wrong chapter, 26 verse 53. Do you not think that I cannot appeal to my Father and he will not once send more than 12 legions of angels? Jesus knew that at any point he could have stopped the proceedings. He knew what was coming, but he said, no, I'm going through with it. Why did he do that? He was walking into Jerusalem before all this happened at Easter time with his eyes wide open as to what was ahead of him. Why would he do that? Why did he go through all that? Why was he willing to go? But remember what Hebrews 12 tells us? For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. What was the joy? What did he have after Easter that he didn't have before? It was his people, wasn't it? He was saving us. He went there so that we could be saved. It was the only way. It wasn't Judas that put Jesus on the cross. Jesus willingly went. It was his love for you and for me. That's what took him there. And so as you behold the love of Jesus, as you see his patience, his willingness to die, can you see the impact? Perhaps you've wondered. Perhaps you feel, yeah, I'm Judas here. Perhaps you've been taking Jesus for granted. You've been close. You've done a lot. It's shown like, you appear to everybody else like you're in a good spot, but you know you're not. I am Judas. But let's not go out into the cold, into the darkness like Judas did. Let's stay close to Jesus. Let's come back to him and see the ugliness of our sin, but the love and the warmth of Jesus. That's what he's done for you. And just before we close, notice what this helps us with as well. Maybe you feel let down by Christians. Maybe you feel let down by somebody and they've betrayed you or hurt you. And if that isn't you this morning, you just need to live a bit longer and you will face that. And it hurts, doesn't it? And perhaps that betrayal just colours everything in your life now. The colour's just gone from everything because of being hurt. Notice here, Jesus knows what it's like to be betrayed. He knows what it's like to be let down by a close friend. We'll see that with Peter next week as well. But he understands. He's been there. And so you can draw close to him in your pain. But also here, he doesn't just leave us kind of knowing that. He equips us to help us with it. Maybe we can see here that the readiness of Jesus to offer Judas that kindness and that love, to wash even his feet. And if Jesus was ready to offer that grace to Judas, can you see by his Spirit dwelling within us, we can have help with the bitterness we can hold against those who betrayed us. He was ready to forgive. And so Jesus, in his kindness and his love, was to say, I can help you to have a heart that's ready to forgive that person for whatever they've done. He gives us the power that on our own we cannot have. So as we think about Judas, we need to be warned by him. Because in his life, we see a huge, really shocking warning. But also we need to be warned by Jesus and say, look, he comes, welcome back. If you've wandered from him, however long that's been, Jesus says to you this morning, come. And maybe you've never come to Jesus. You've heard a lot. See the danger of the position you could be in if you don't turn to him today. We don't know how long we've got. And today is the day of salvation. Turn to him right now and he won't cast you away.